From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, we've got a great show ahead for you today. We've got some big anniversaries that we're celebrating for people who are interested in these particular things. We've got Our Lady of Pontmain, which is one of the top 10 most highly approved apparitions in the history of the Catholic Church, and that is celebrating its 150th anniversary. And we're talking to Marian expert Dr. Robert Festigi, and he happens to be the co-author of my book, Virgin Mother Queen, from Ave Maria Press, that came out last year. So we'll be excited to talk to Robert and listen to his expertise about Mary as advocate. And this has been the 190th anniversary of the Bishop Frederick Berga, a venerable in our Catholic Church, coming to America, and his faith is amazing, and the way he evangelizes is out of this world. He's known as the snowshoe priest because he put on snowshoes and trekked all over Upper Peninsula Michigan. So he's one of my favorite might-be saints out there, and we did a show on him on the show They Might Be Saints. So he's a great one to get to know, and we'll be talking with Lenora McKean, the executive director of the Bishop Berga Association, about his incredible life. And later in the show, we'll be looking at the 365 Days with Mary project. For today, January 23rd, we've got Our Lady of Grandici in Italy in the year 1495. And we'll also be looking at the Might Be Saint of the Day for today's date, January 23rd, that feast day, Blessed Benedetta Bianchi Porro from Italy, who lived from 1936 to 1964. And we'll be asking you a trivia question, of course, Catholic Pub Trivia, so get your pens and paper ready for that. And we'll be asking a question about venerables who were best friends. So you might know that answer based on that. And in the question of the week, we'll be talking about Joey Vitolo. He's the boy in the Bronx who was said to see visions of Mary at age 9 in the year 1945. It's kind of an interesting story, but we'll have a question whether that is a believable apparition that's been approved by the Catholic Church. We'll be talking about that later in the show. Let's take a look at miracle news. Each week we talk about the miracles happening in today's world and those things that are being reported. I post them all on Facebook, the different miracle stories that are coming up and those things that relate to miracles. And one of the interesting places, I think, in Italy is Montepello, which is this place that houses the image of perhaps what is thought to be the Veronica Veil. And we all know from tradition, not from the Gospels themselves, that Veronica, Saint Veronica, as she's come to be known, wiped the face of Jesus. And the story is that the face of Jesus, the imprint, transferred to that cloth. And that cloth was in existence for some time. And scholars have wondered where the cloth has been over recent centuries. And the thought that maybe it is in Montepello. I'm not quite sure about that. I think it's more of a legend than a reality. But what's very interesting is this news item that Archbishop Ganswein, he actually went to venerate that image of the Montepello image, the face of Jesus there. And that kind of implies sort of an interest, at least at the very minimum, but it's some sort of a low-level approval, not quite declaring it to be authentic. But Archbishop George Ganswein said this past week that the holy face of Montepello conveys the, quote, incomparable news of Christ's resurrection. And he's the prefect of the papal household, so he's a big name. And he made this comment just a week ago as he preached at Mass at the Shrine of the Holy Face in Montepello. It's a village in the Abruzzo region of southern Italy. And he recalled that Pope Benedict, actually, in 2006, became the first pope in several centuries to visit this Capuchin monastery. And this was a big meeting that he would call it between Benedict and this image, and also when Benedict also visited the Shroud of Turin. These are big news items when we talk about the resurrection of Christ. That was the point of Archbishop Ganswein. And so many devotees of this image believe it is the Veil of Veronica. And again, that was used to dry Christ's face, and they say it... perhaps is the sudarium, or corresponds to the sudarium, which is known as the resurrection cloth or the face cloth that was with Jesus in his tomb. Many others consider it to be inauthentic. In my opinion, the face on the cloth isn't that believable. You can go to miraclehunter.com Facebook and check it out. I've got images posted of this Montepello image that people say is perhaps the Veronica Veil, one of the most famous images in all of Christendom. And so, but this was a big news item that we had Archbishop Ganswein going, traveling to this location and then giving commentary about it, sort of lending his credence in it or saying that he believed it to be authentic in one way or another. So that's the news item for this week. And for more news items, just connect to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. And we post every day there different news items happening all around the world. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. This past week, we had a question related to saints from New York. And so what is the name of a saint who was born in a region that later became New York before the founding of the United States? And that, of course, is St. Kateri Tekakwitha. Thanks for those who wrote in with that correct answer. We had lots of people who knew that St. Kateri was from what would be known as New York. Now, this week, we'll be talking about Venerable Bishop Berga on the episode. And so this question relates to him. Which American Venerable was best friends and the confessor of Venerable Bishop Berga? That question again, what other American Venerable was best friends and the confessor of Venerable Bishop Berga? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, and maybe you'll be the winner of the prize this week. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about the snowshoe priest from the UP. That's Venerable Bishop Frederick Berga. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I hope people got to tune in to the episode of They Might Be Saints this past week, the story of Mother Mary Angeline Teresa McCrory. She was born in Ireland and moved to Scotland, and then she came to New York. And it was an incredible story of her actually changing orders changing religious communities in the middle of her life, going from a little sister of the poor to founding the Carmelite Sisters of the Aged and the Infirm. And people can find out more about the series They Might Be Saints by going to theymightbesaints.com or just go to the EWTN website and look under the shows, and you'll be able to find out when the next one's going to be airing. And next month, we're going to be covering the story of Venerable Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. He was known as the Bishop of the Barrio. And so that's going to be a really interesting episode. And the next month after that, we'll be doing Venerable Father Al Schwartz. He is an incredible, incredible priest who set up all these homes for children in Korea and the Philippines and in Mexico. So I've been to the place in Mexico that he set up, and it's truly eye-opening. I think hundreds of thousands of people have been aided by his help. But along the path, we've done, I think, 11 or 12 of these episodes so far. And one of my all-time favorite episodes that we worked on was one of the early ones. It was about Venerable Bishop Frederick Berga from Slovenia. It's kind of an interesting thing. He's on the path to sainthood. He's a venerable now. He needs one miracle, which is being investigated right now. I think they have one that has real potential. So he may be a blessed before we know it. But that's being reviewed by the Medical Commission in the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. But when I look at the life of Venerable Bishop Berga, he's, you know, doing these episodes, I get to learn about the lives of these future American saints, and it's really inspiring to sort of get new intercessors to turn to. But when we all look at our lives of faith and we think about different people that we can pray to and perhaps, you know, be inspired by, Bishop Berga is an incredible, incredible person, because I think we all want to do a little bit more. We all want the inspiration to sort of amp things up and increase our life of faith and tell other people about it and evangelize. And, you know, we probably all get the sense that we're not doing enough. And when we turn to somebody like Bishop Berga, he's known as the snowshoe priest from Upper Peninsula, Michigan. And he would put on snowshoes and travel. He traveled for hundreds of miles throughout his life, just going from place to place and evangelizing for the farmers there, the miners there, the silver miners, and also the Native Americans who lived there. But he traveled everywhere, and he spared no opportunity. He went everywhere at any time he could. And he lived a very simple life, eating often just a potato on the road to get from one place to the next. So an incredible life of faith, Venerable Bishop Berrigah. And so we're excited today to talk to the executive director of the Bishop Berrigah Association that's up in Marquette, Michigan, Upper Peninsula, Michigan, and that's Lenora McKean. And we've gotten to know each other over the years working together on that episode of They Might Be Saints. And you can actually download that episode of They Might Be Saints from and service of EWTN. So I encourage people to start with that episode. That is truly one of my favorites. The sets on that are amazing. And I think we had the weather condition as we were filming. We had snow, rain, sleet, and hail, you know, and I think those all made it into the film. So it was quite the weather experience there. So I'm so excited today to talk to Lenora McKean about the life of the incredible future American saint, and that's Venerable Bishop Berrigah. Welcome to the program today, Len.
Thank you, Michael. Glad to be here.
Yeah, it's good to chat with you as always, and I think this is a good time of year to chat about Venerable Bishop Frederick Berrigah. And I think that people are blown away when they hear the extent that Bishop Berrigah went through to spread the faith. And he's known as the Snowshoe Priest. Why does he have that moniker?
Well, he earned that title ministering for 38 years in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and the Great Lakes region, which, of course, we tend to be known for our snowfall. And he wasn't going to allow that to stop him from ministering to the Native Americans and eventually the miners and fur traders that came to the area. And so oftentimes he'd have to utilize snowshoes so that he could trudge through the forest to get to those that he wanted to teach the faith to.
Absolutely. And I think that, people are inspired when they hear the distances that he traveled. And I think, you know, some of these stories are amazing when he needs to administer the sacraments to somebody who's very sick. I think his care for the people and especially the Native American people that he served was incredible and a real, it's a true example for us.
He's such a great witness. I can account so many times. I mean, for example, a young girl who was dying that had not been baptized, and they came to Father Berrigah, and he knew that she needed to receive the sacrament, and so he went 57 miles on foot to baptize her. And I talk to youth a lot, and I always remind them that it had to be a two-way trip. He had to come home. So, you know, he walked over 100 miles to make sure that she received the sacrament, because it was that important to him that she have an opportunity to encounter our Lord. There's no mountain that was too great to get around to bring the faith to people.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I think that was fascinating about him is that when it came to ministering to the Native American people of the region, he took it to the next level as far as learning the language himself and writing the dictionary and really meeting everybody where they were at. Talk a little bit about how he specifically paid attention to the specific needs of the Native American people there.
So when he came over in 1830 to America, he knew that the first thing he had to do was to learn the language of the Native Americans. He has said time and time in his writings that you cannot minister to people if you can't talk to them in their native tongue. And so he had no desire for them to learn his language. He knew that he needed to learn theirs. And so he worked hard to, that was the first task that he had when he was in Ohio. He hired an 18-year-old native guide that taught him the language of the Native Americans. And then he eventually created a dictionary that is still in use today. He created a grammar and a dictionary of the Ojibwe language that is used today, because it was that important that not only he be able to communicate, but he needed help. The faith was growing so much, and he didn't want anybody to be absent of the sacraments and the teaching, so he needed priests to come and help him. He had 17 missionaries that followed him over. But of course, they needed to be able to speak in the Native Americans' native tongue as well. So that dictionary proved useful to help them learn the language.
Now, Bishop Biriga, he's Slovenian in descent, and it's kind of interesting. I mean, we think about famous Slovenians. We think about Luka Doncic, the 21-year-old basketball phenom who may go down as the greatest player in history. We'll see. And then we have Melania Trump, who's Slovenian. And then when we talk about other people that Americans know who are Slovenian, the list is very short. And when you're in Upper Peninsula, Michigan, everywhere you go, there are these giant shrines and roads and buildings and monuments. They're named for Bishop Biriga. He is the absolute most famous person in Upper Peninsula, Michigan. So so he's left an incredible legacy. Talk a little bit about that, the legacy of Bishop Biriga.
Well, I think everybody knew, you know, when he died in 1868, it was a civic day of mourning. Everything closed down. Everything closed down for his funeral, which is really kind of unheard of and unusual. But he had such a profound effect on the Native Americans and the faith, but also just the development of a new area that had not been inhabited before. So community leaders were very drawn to him, because he was willing to go the extra to be able to make sure that people had what they needed to have successful lives. And so there are roads named after him. There is a beautiful statue up in Launce, which I've said he was there for 10 years. His heart is probably still there. There's state parks. There's schools. He's left a living legacy.
Thank you for that. And when we look at the life of Bishop Biriga, he's got this great legacy and people find him inspiring. And I think that part of what you work for at the Bishop Biriga Association is to move him along the path to sainthood. You start out as servant of God, then when your life of heroic virtue has been established, you're venerable. But then the next step needs to happen to get to blessed. What is the cause working on next to advance him along the path?
So our next step, of course, is the declaration of blessed or beatification. And in order for that to happen, there has to be a potential cure that is not explained by any kind of scientific or medical intervention. And, of course, there are some very strict requirements. Has to have occurred with enough time to pass that it doesn't raise level of question of was it really an intercession. And, of course, it's got to be something that happened immediate. And so we have one of those cases. We actually got it sent to Rome just prior to the pandemic. So we were very hopeful that it would get to the medical commission, who they're the next people that would review it. Unfortunately, the pandemic has slowed it down a little bit, but we're ready to go. We have the summarium all set, and it will go to the two medical experts for their review. And as long as one or both of them deem it favorable, it will go to the full medical commission. And so we're just hopeful that that will happen sooner rather than later. And we always say it's in God's time, that of course we want everybody to know what a saintly man he is, but this will happen in God's time.
That's right. We've been talking today with Lenora McKean, the executive director of the Bishop Biriga Association, about Venerable Bishop Frederick Biriga, one of the great future American saints, and someone we featured on the series They Might Be Saints. So when we look at Bishop Biriga, he's a great inspiration to me in my life of faith, as I mentioned earlier in the program, putting on those snowshoes and traveling all over Upper Peninsula, Michigan, and he really inspires me in my faith. He lived some time ago, so people might look at him as a historic cause, but I think his example is valuable in today's world. How can he be looked at as a sort of a modern future saint?
Well, I think one of the things is he's the only bishop that I'm aware of that has written a pastoral letter, his first pastoral letter in two languages. He wrote it in English, but then he wrote it in the Ojibwe language because he wanted his children, the Native Americans, to be able to read it in their native tongue. And I oftentimes will say, let's take 1853 off of that, and let's just put the current date on it, because it is so relevant to what is going on in our lives today. And I think that's what makes him such a modern-day saint, is he's really, the legacy that we talked about, it really is lasting. He doesn't have a specific time period that he talks to. He was really kind of ahead of his time, and he's so relevant to today.
Absolutely. As I always say, he's a great inspiration to me and my faith. And I think that people out there can really learn more about him. They can go to your website, bishopberega.com. And of course, in this 190th year of him coming to America, you celebrated in a big way, albeit virtual. Tell us just a little bit about how you celebrated that big year for him.
Well, 2020 has definitely taught us a whole lot. But of course, there weren't things that derailed Bishop Berega. So we knew that a pandemic couldn't derail us either. So we created a virtual Berega Days event, which is an annual event we hold in the fall every year. This year it was slated to be in Chicago in September. And since we weren't able to travel, we did everything virtually. And it is on our website at bishopberega.org. And it will live there for a while so people can reference the talks and the different information about his life. The other thing that we did is December 31st was the 190th anniversary of him coming to America. December 29th was the 90th anniversary of the Bishop Berega Association being founded. And so we kicked off on December 31st a virtual snowshoe walk in honor of Bishop Berega. Ironically, we've had very little snowfall up here in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, short of the last couple of days. But we encouraged people to get out and to hike and to just unplug and get back to just the basics, right? Get back to God. And we ran that through the anniversary of his death date, which was January 19th.
Now, that's beautiful. I'm so glad that you're able to celebrate despite this strange and challenging year. Well, thank you so much, Lenora McKean, the executive director of the Bishop Berega Association. We've been talking today about Venerable Bishop Frederick Berega. His death anniversary was just around the corner, and just in the past is January 19th. So this is a great time to talk about him. People can find out more at bishopberega.org. Thanks so much, Len, for being with us on today's program.
Thank you very much.
And that was Lenora McKean from the Bishop Berega Association. Great reflections on a great future American saint. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Have you ever heard of the apparitions received by a 7-year or 9-year-old boy in the Bronx? Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I actually really like answering people's questions. I think when I give talks around the country, normal non-coronavirus year, maybe I'll go to 15 or 20 places around the country and give these talks. And at the end of the 45-minute presentation, I always leave a little bit of time to do question and answer. And it's kind of interesting. Sometimes it's a couple of minutes, but other times it's as long as an hour because people really want to know about miracles and what the research shows. So I'm always happy to answer miracles. So if you have a question, send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com or go to the website miraclehunter.com. You can send me an email through the website as well. And so we had a really good question this past week, and it's a question from John. He says, "Dear Miracle Hunter, have you heard of the apparitions received by Joey Vitolo? Why is this not approved? It has never been used to make money. This guy stayed loyal, and he suffered so much ridicule, and there are no demands except to pray the rosary for peace. Thank you, John." It's a good question. Most people haven't heard of this alleged Marian apparition in the United States. It's happened in the Bronx in 1945. A 9-year-old boy named Joey Vitolo began to receive visions for quite a long amount of time, and they built a shrine that's still there today. If you go to the Bronx, you can visit this place, and it's not a fancy shrine or there's no church or basilica built there, but something remains, and this is from 1945, and so this is many decades ago. But it was one of these cases where the Catholic Church never really thought that it was truly authentic, or they didn't really know. And it wasn't a case of where they condemned it, but it wasn't a case where they approved it. And I think it's kind of important to review the three categories that the church uses when it looks at apparition approval. And we talk about this a little bit on the show, so past listeners of the show will probably remember this, and it's a little bit arcane, but when you look at apparition approvals, and this is when the local bishop has something come up in his diocese and he decides to investigate it. He doesn't have to, but sometimes when the crowds get so big, it makes sense to do this. And he'll interview the witnesses or he'll interview the visionaries and he'll try to rule things out that can be ruled out. But the three categories of approval are non constate supernaturalitate, which is it is not established as supernatural. And that is the case where they kind of say, well, it might be, it could be, but we don't know, and so we're not going to say that it is. Or they might give the judgment of constate non supernaturalitate, which is it is established as not supernatural. It is definitely not. It is for sure not supernatural. And that's the most negative type of apparition. So if you're a follower of a certain Marian apparition, and people seem to follow these things like they do baseball teams, everybody's got their allegiances, it seems. But if the one that you're interested in or following or reading the messages of gets this very negative judgment of constate non, established as not supernatural, you're following the wrong horse. You know, this is you're backing the wrong horse. This is the wrong thing to do. And then there's the very positive ones. We talk about constate supernaturalitate, and that is established as supernatural. That's Fatima, Lourdes, Guadalupe, Cabejo in Rwanda, those apparitions in Belgium, Barang and Bonneau, La Salette and Pontmain, and some of these, a handful of others. If you look at my book, Virgin Mother Queen, in that book, I list the top 10 most highly investigated and approved apparitions. And so when we're talking about, back to Joey Vitolo and the apparitions claimed in the Bronx in 1945 by this 9-year-old boy, it received that middle category, which is non constat, not established. It's a maybe. So the church doesn't condemn it. They don't say there's anything wrong with the messages or the faith and morals. And so you talk about Our Lady asks people to pray the rosary for peace in these apparitions, which, you know, seems like a nice message. And so the Catholic Church won't condemn something that says only that, unless there's reason. There's a pursuit of financial gain, which you're saying there's not, or there's pursuit of fame, or other things that appear to draw a red flag. So when we talk about Joey Vitolo, the church never gave it that constat judgment of the Fatima Lourdes Guadalupe style. It never said constate non, which is definitely not. So it sits in that middle category, and it'd probably stand that way forever. But this is in the vast majority of Marian apparitions, it gets this sort of middle category where the church says, you know, there's nothing wrong with it technically, but there's nothing that says we have moral certainty that it is a supernatural event. So thanks for your question, John. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to miraclehunter@ewtn.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Now let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. Each week we do this where we look at the Marian devotion that lines up exactly to the day's date. You might be surprised, I was when I first put this book and this project together, that for every day of the calendar year, there's a different Marian devotion, sort of a feast day or a title or a miraculous event or some other commemoration that lines up exactly to every single day of the calendar year. So we look at Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, which is coming right up, or Guadalupe, December 12th. These are the famous ones, but there are smaller ones for every day of the calendar year. So for today's day, we've got Our Lady of Grandici in Italy in the year 1495. And the story goes that this shrine, located in Tavernelle, and it's guarded by hermits, it was built to protect a tempera painting of the enthroned Madonna. And in thanksgiving for the miracle of having raised a child from the dead. And the shrine became popular in the 13th century as a stopping point for those traveling from Perugia to Città di Pieve. And it's identified in folk tradition as a place of miracles for women who cannot conceive children. And the name Grandici derives from the Latin term sungendarium, underground, and it's a place where dead children were buried without being baptized. And so that is Our Lady of Grandici in Italy in the year 1495. If you want more information on this fascinating devotion or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions throughout the world, you can connect to this project by going to the website 365dayswithmary.com. You can pick up the book by the same title. You can go to the Facebook page 365 Days with Mary, or you can download the free app from the iOS App Store named 365 Days with Mary. Yeah, it's a free download. Check it out. Now let's take a look at the might-be saint of the day. This is a new thing that we do on this radio show where we talk about The different might be saints of the day. And when we look at those who might be saints, I'm referring to that sort of title of my television series, They Might Be Saints. And when we look at these people, we're talking about people from miracle workers to martyrs to those ordinary people living extraordinary lives of heroic virtue. And these are the people that make us wonder if someday they might be saints. And so before we dive in today's Might Be Saint of the Day, let's look at sainthood news. And so this just came out. So this is kind of exciting that we're able to report on this, is that and this was reported by Catholic News Agency, that Pope Francis has recognized on Thursday the heroic virtues of Jérôme Lejeune, and he's the French geneticist who discovered the extra chromosome that causes Down's syndrome. And so this announcement, which came out on January 21st, means that Lejeune can be referred to as venerable. And of course, heroic virtue, as we talk about often, is one of the requirements for beatification in the Catholic Church, and a verified miracle attributed to the candidate's intercession will be required after that. And so Lejeune, he's born in 1926 in France, and he deduced in 1958 that Down syndrome was caused by an extra copy of chromosome 21, and he dedicated the rest of his life to researching treatments to improve the lives of people with Down syndrome. And he firmly opposed the use of prenatal testing to identify unborn children with Down syndrome and other chromosomal abnormalities which would lead to abortion. And so he received the prestigious William Allen Award for his work in genetics in 1969. And in that speech, he actually gave this really impassioned speech where he opposed abortion. And so his was the big name of the people who are elevated to a next step in canonization. And the church does this every so many months. The Pope also advanced seven other causes for canonization along with Lejeune. He recognized the Italian priest Giovanni Porcini. He was a martyr. He recognized six other candidates, Elizabeth Prout, founder of the Passionist Sisters. He also acknowledged the heroic virtues of the Italian priests, Father Michele Arcangelo, Maria Antonio Vinti, and Father Ruggero Maria Caputo, and also Santiago Masarnau, a pianist who is recognized as well. So there are a number of people who have been moved along the path to sainthood to venerable, but there were no miracles that were declared at this time. And so when we look at the Might Be Saint of the Day, we talk about people who are venerables, just like these six or seven people were advanced along that path, and blesseds, people who are one step away from canonization. And so for today's date, January 23rd, we've got Blessed Benedetta Bianchi Porro. She lived in Italy from the year 1936 to the year 1964. She was born on August 8th in 1936 in Forli, and she was the second of six children, and she had some severe physiological difficulties. She was afflicted with polio at an early age, leaving her with a crippled left leg, and she needed to wear a brace to prevent her spine from deforming. But she was a clever and happy child, and she kept a diary starting at age five. And this record was a lifelong record that actually helped her sainthood cause, because it showed the way she carried her cross of disability to the congregation, to the cause of saints after she died. And she lived this long life and had multiple operations, including one that left her legs paralyzed, and she was in a wheelchair for many years. And she, after that, she had another operation which left her blind. She could barely speak, and she could only move her right hand. So she had an incredible life of suffering. But it was through this that that she was able to join herself with the suffering of Christ, and she was recognized as a blessed. And so she died on January 23rd in Sirmione, Italy, and this is the date of her feast day. And on December 23rd of 1993, Pope John Paul II decreed her life of heroic virtue, and Pope Francis in 2019 on September 14th named her blessed. And so that's today's Might Be Saint of the Day. That's Blessed Benedetta Bianchi Porro from Italy, living from the years 1936 to 1964. And for more information on the Might Be Saint of the Day, you can connect to the Facebook feed of They Might Be Saints or check out theymightbesaints.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Robert Festigi about the apparitions at Our Lady of Pontmain celebrating their 150th anniversary. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. I put together a book. I'm not sure if you've seen this one yet. It came out about a year ago, and it's called Virgin Mother Queen, and I'm the co-author on the book. I was so honored to be able to write this book with Dr. Robert Festigi, and you might know him as one of the great Marian experts here in the United States and former president of the Mariological Society of America, of which I am a member. And Dr. Festigi is the Bishop Kevin M. Britt Chair of Dogmatic Theology and Christology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary, and in my opinion, perhaps the top expert on Mary in the United States. So we're so excited because we have a big feast day that is being celebrated, and that is on January 17th. We have the 150th anniversary of the apparitions of Our Lady of Pontmain in France. That's 1871. 150 years later is where we're at today. And anytime you have these big celebrations, I think Pope Benedict in 2008 was at Lourdes for the 150th celebration there. And in probably in a non-pandemic, non-coronavirus year, you'd see Pope Francis there himself as well. And so I was so excited to be able to go there a couple of years ago and see this beautiful, beautiful basilica that just crops up in the small town, this beautiful blue glass windows. And it's an incredible place to visit. And it's a hard place to visit in the northwest of France. But we're so excited today because we've got Dr. Robert Festigi joining us on the program today to talk to us about this little known but highly approved Marian apparition. Welcome to the show today, Dr. Festigi.
Oh, Michael, it's my honor, and you're too kind in what you say about me. I'm always learning, and I think of what Pope Francis said to the International Theological Commission, that the Madonna is the teacher of authentic theology. I've often wondered what he meant by that, but she is really the one who teaches us the silent truths about our Lord, because she knew him better than any human being, and she is still our mother in the order of grace.
That's right. And speaking of silent truths, we've got the apparitions of Our Lady of Pontmain in France in 1871. We've got the big celebration of the 150th anniversary of this singular apparition. She appeared on just one day, and she did not say anything verbally, which is very different than any of the perhaps 16 highly approved apparitions, or the 10 that we've highlighted in the book together, Virgin, Mother, and Queen. Our Lady of Knock is one of these other famous examples where she is strangely silent. But this is an incredible event that happened with the Franco-Prussian War raging. And if you want to talk a little bit, and we can both talk about this because we both wrote the book together, and this was one of the key chapters of one of the most famous, most highly approved apparitions in history. What happened in 1871 that has caught the church's attention all these years later?
Well, yes. Well, there was a period of violence and turmoil, and the Prussian troops were ready to enter in that area of France where Pontmain is located, near Laval, the larger city of Laval. And there was great apprehension, and many people were praying. And then on January 17th, 1871, snow had fallen and covered the village, but two young boys, Eugene, who was 12, and Joseph, 10, Barbadette was their last name, helped their father with the yard work. And then all of a sudden they saw a woman. And Eugene asked the others whether they saw the woman that he and Joseph saw, but no one else saw her. And he just told his mother that she's so beautiful. And then a neighbor boy who heard the shout came running, and he also saw the vision, but the adult could see nothing. So this is kind of strange, but all the children also saw the beautiful tall lady. But so then Françoise Richer and Jeanne-Marie Le Bosset, and also a young six-year-old, Eugene Friteau, all claimed to see the woman. And then they formed a circle of prayer. And the children were in absolute agreement what they had seen. The Virgin Mary wore this blue robe decorated with golden stars, and on her head was a black veil. and a gold crown, and she wore blue shoes with gold ribbons, and she was tall and beautiful, like the children's favorite teacher. So she reminded them of their favorite teacher, who was this very tall sister in their school. But the crowd gathered together and they began praying very fervently. And at first, the face of the Virgin was very sad. And Joseph Barbadet said her face was marked with deep sorrow. And so it was a period of tension. And then this was similar to the famous vision of Our Lady of Knock, which would occur eight years later in Ireland.
Yes.
The apparition was motionless, but then as the crowd prayed the rosary, some motion began to take place with different elements in the scene, and a small red cross appeared over the heart of the vision and a blue oval frame with four candles. And then there were stars on her robe that began to grow brighter. So then the crowd began to pray the Magnificat, and she elevated her hands with her palms outward, and then the priest began singing the Ave Maristella, and then she lowered her hands, and two white crosses appeared on her shoulders. So she stayed until the parish priest began to lead the prayer. At that time, a white veil rose from below her and covered her until she disappeared. But there were no verbal messages imparted to the children, but this is where there was a verbal message through these banners that appeared after she had disappeared. And one white banner with a gold text appeared under the lady's feet and said, "But pray, my children." And then there was another banner bearing the name of Christ hanging down from it. And this sentence appeared on the white scroll: "God will soon grant your request." And then a third statement appeared, and this is, I think, the one most connected with Our Lady as an advocate. My son allows himself to be moved. And so when this apparition occurred, the Prussian army was advancing to that part of France. And the Prussian army stopped its march through France when the commander of the Prussian army claimed to have experienced the presence of the Virgin Mary, and his name was General Schmidt, and he said, "We cannot go any further. Yonder in the direction of Brittany, there is an invisible Madonna barring the way."
Isn't that amazing that not only did the children see this vision of Mary, but the actual commander marching his army ahead could not go any further because he too sensed Mary was protecting that area. It's absolutely amazing. We've been talking today with Dr. Robert Vestigi, the co-author of Virgin, Mother, and Queen with me. He's the co-author with me, and he is the Bishop Kevin Embritt Chair of Dogmatic Theology and Christology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary. And this is an incredible event, and I think that it's one of the most highly approved of all the Marian apparitions in history. You know, we have a very, very large number of alleged apparitions. I think 2,500 has been the number that has been tabulated, and perhaps 28 times a local bishop has approved them, and only 16 times or thereabouts has been the Vatican the ones who've recognized this as an authentic event. And we highlighted in our book, Virgin, Mother, and Queen, from Ave Maria Press, these various instances where Mary has intervened in our midst, and we identified 10, and we also paired those with some Marian titles: Mary as Blessed, Mary as Virgin, Mary as Mother of God. And so when we talk about Our Lady of Pontmain, we talk about Mary as advocate. And for me, anyway, this is one of the clearest examples we have in history where Mary directly intervened and saved that town and saved France, perhaps, from the advancing armies of the Prussians. What is your sense of Mary as advocate?
Yes, it's a beautiful title for Mary. And of course, in Scripture, it's attributed to the Holy Spirit, who's Parakletos, which means advocate. And also in the first letter of John, chapter 2, verse 1, Jesus is identified as the righteous one who is our advocate with the Father. But very early on, church fathers began to refer to Mary in the sense that she comes to the aid of those who pray to her. And this this is the root meaning of advocate, that advocare means to call to or to summon. And of course, in some languages, the word for a lawyer is the same as an advocate. Sometimes we use that even in English, but like in Spanish and Italian, the word for lawyer would be the equivalent of an advocate, you know, abogado or abogada, and so forth. But Lumen Gentium in Vatican II refers to Mary as the advocate. But when we pray on behalf of others, as we're commanded to in 1 Timothy, we are advocates too. We're calling our prayer. We're interceding for others. But Mary was clearly the advocate at the wedding feast of Cana, recorded in the second letter of John, and various popes have recognized this. But early on, we have St. Irenaeus, who died around 202, calling Mary an advocate. We also have St. Ephrem of Syria, who died in 373, calling Mary the advocate of the abandoned. And I could go on and on with many other church fathers, including St. Augustine, who recognized the martyrs as our advocates. And if martyrs can serve as our advocates, then certainly the Mother of God can as well. But I think we're mostly familiar with this title through one of the most important prayers to Our Lady, which is the Hail Holy Queen, or the Salve Regina. And this beautiful prayer began to be prayed in the Abbey of Cluny in France around 1135. Now, it was attributed to St. Bernard of Clairvaux, but more recent research thinks it probably was written by Blessed Herman the Lame or someone else. But regardless of who wrote it, it's such a beautiful prayer, and usually we pray this at the end of the rosary. And there we see both hope and advocate appear in the prayer, because we say, Hail, Holy Queen, Mother of Mercy, hail our life, our sweetness, and our hope, Spes Nostra, Salve. And then there's later the line, Turn then, most gracious advocate, thine eyes of mercy towards us. And after this, our exile, show unto us the blessed fruit of thy womb, Jesus. So she's called Advocata Nostra. And so this is a beautiful title given to Mary. And we recognize that she comes to the aid of those who pray. And even going back to the earliest prayer that we know in church history to Mary, the Sub Tuum Praesidium from the 3rd or the 4th century, the prayer reads, We fly to thy protection, O Holy Mother of God. Do not despise our petitions and our necessities, but deliver us always from all dangers, O glorious and blessed Virgin. So without using the term advocate, calling upon Mary for her protection, this is asking her to come to our aid as an advocate. And so many popes have referred to Mary as advocate. Leo X in 1520, Sixtus V in 1587, Clement IX in 1667, Clement XI in 1708, and in his apostolic constitution, Tanto Studio, Pope Pius VII explains why Mary's power of intercession as our advocate is more powerful than that of all the other saints, because she is the mother. And so, as he says, as handmaid she prays, but as mother she commands. In other words, she has a certain motherly authority because she's the mother of the Word incarnate. And then we have St. Pius X speaking of Mary as our queen and advocate. And Pius XII, in one of his radio addresses in 1947, quotes the Jesuit Francisco Suarez and say, we have the Virgin as universal advocate in all things, for she is more powerful in whatever necessity than are all the other saints in particular needs. So this is recognizing Mary's type of omnipotence of intercession by grace. And St. John Paul II has referred to this, and in his apostolic letter on the rosary, he uses a beautiful phrase that he says you must be careful in using it, but that the Blessed Mother has a type of omnipotence by grace, omnipotens per gratiam, and in the sense that she has, as being so close to Jesus, being united in an inseparable bond, which Vatican II affirms in several places, she has this most powerful intercessory authority as the mother, really the Queen Mother. So this is why we turn to her in our necessities. Now, she hears our prayers, and she appeals to her Son. So all of her power of intercession comes by the grace she received, really at the first moment of her conception in the Immaculate Conception. But she is considered really to be the most powerful intercessor for our needs that we could imagine, that she is the Queen of the Saints, and that's why we turn to her, especially in times of need, as our advocate, Advocata Nostra.
Absolutely. Incredible reflections today from Dr. Robert Festigi, who co-authored the book with me, Virgin, Mother, and Queen, and he's the Bishop Kevin M. Britt Chair of Dogmatic Theology and Christology at Sacred Heart Seminary. Incredible reflections, and so appropriate as we reflect on the 150th anniversary of Pontmain, France, Our Lady of Hope in 1871, appearing and averting the war, the Franco-Prussian War, bringing that to an end and becoming one of the most highly approved Marian apparitions in the history of our church. Well, we're so grateful to you, Dr. Robert Festigi, for joining us on today's program and sharing your knowledge and love of Mary with us today.
Well, thank you, Michael, and I so much admire the work you're doing. You're a godsend, so God bless you and your work, and we'll be in touch then. Bye-bye.
God bless. And that was Dr. Robert Festigi. Incredible reflections about Our Lady of Pontmain and Our Lady as advocate. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio and check out the audio archives or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank my guests today, Lenora McKean from the Bishop Berga Association and Dr. Robert Festigi, co-author of the book Virgin, Mother, and Queen, and talking to us today about Our Lady as Advocate. Incredible reflections from Dr. Robert Festigi. And I encourage you, if you're interested in a pilgrimage, I'm going April 12th through 22nd of this year to Poland and Lithuania. Go to pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter for more information. We're celebrating the 100th year anniversary feast day of John Paul II. We'll be seeing the original and famous image of Divine Mercy, all the St. Faustina sites, some Vatican-recognized Marian apparition sites, Eucharistic miracles recently approved, and famous images like Our Lady of Częstochowa and Our Lady, Gate of Dawn. If you love miracles and you've never been to Poland, check out the details at pilgrimages.com/miraclehunter. And sign up for the newsletter on miraclehunter.com for more information on miracle stories, where I'll be speaking next, upcoming book releases, and more. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.